Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. I'm here today with Michael. I should ask you, is it Chernow?
Chernow.
Chernow. Wonderful. Michael is founder of Creatures of Habit. You'll also find out that he's a serial entrepreneur, which we'll hear about. The mission of, I guess you, that you acronym is KOH. So what do you say for that? Co?
We just call it KOH.
KOH. Okay. But the mission is to deliver healthy, easy to implement habits that are incredibly delicious and crave worthy, designed for performance and very good for you to help propel people into better decision making on a daily basis. When we met, I don't know, a month and a half ago, we immediately hit it off. So I was excited to get you on here so that our listeners can hear your story and the mission that you're on. And I think they'll quickly realize that you live life with gusto, which is awesome. So welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
You can do this however long you want, but just give us an overview of where you grew up, where you went to school, and then a little bit about your career. And we'll drill in deeper, but just a snapshot of who you are.
Well, my name is Michael Chernow. I am an entrepreneur and I have founded three companies to date. I've exited two successfully and I'm building the third right now, Creatures of Habit. I grew up in the Big Apple in Manhattan, in New York City. I was born in 1980, so I was really sort of at the precipice of modern culture in the world, right? New York City was really, and probably still is, the epicenter of modern culture across all categories. And I was like knee deep in the middle of it as a kid growing up and experiencing all of those things, specifically in, I would say, modern pop culture and all the things that touch pop culture, from entertainment to fashion to really New York City, I think, does hold the crown for modern pop culture creativity and emerging brands that way. And so I grew up in the city. My mother was a secretary and my father was an electrician. My father got very sick when he was young, so he ended up spending the majority of my life on permanent disability. So it was pretty much he was home all the time and my mom was out working and my dad was a tough dude to be around. He was a very blue collary, angry guy. He was sick, so he couldn't work. And he and I had a pretty tumultuous relationship. There wasn't a lot of money around. So if I wanted anything that I thought was cool, and again, remember, I'm living in New York City where all the coolest things are all over the place. I went to public school with lots and lots of kids and of varying different demographics. And, you know, I would always see like the fancy sneakers and like the cool backpack and clothes. And I wanted all that stuff. And I was not getting it at home from my parents. So it compelled me to want to go out and make. And I call it today, from as early as I can remember, I was a maker, a doer, and a creator. And from 5, 6 years old, I would ask my older sister to come downstairs with me in front of our building. I would lay a sheet out on the sidewalk and I would neatly place all the toys that I did not want anymore in my room and sell them for $1 or $2 a piece. Then I got into baseball and basketball card collecting and trading and selling. And, you know, there was a very kind of famous baseball card or sport card store a couple of blocks from my house. And I would go in there and wheel and deal as a young kid. So I was always in this sort of entrepreneurial mindset. I always had the mindset of what can I do to generate? And if that meant generate relationships, great. That meant generate capital, great. It was always for me about generation and how can I be better at that? And I didn't know it at the time, but I cut my teeth as a young kid. And then I ultimately got a job at the church rectory where I was, you know, 11 years old, standing at the church rectory, signing funeral and wedding cards. And, you know, they were paying me minimum wage. And then one day I was offered a job as a delivery boy for a vegan restaurant on 76th Street and 3rd Avenue. And I loved rollerblading. So I was, and this is the 90s where rollerblading was actually cool. And I was rollerblading all over the city. And a buddy of mine who was a little bit older was answering phones at this restaurant in the delivery department and said, hey, you want to deliver food? And I was like, hell yeah. So I got a job delivering food. You know, the more time I spent in the restaurant, the more I grew a passion for being in that environment. When I was 13, they gave me a job in the kitchen. That's when I really did feel like I had arrived because I was making money. I was around a lot of people. I know, and those days I was beginning to develop this passion for connecting with humans. That is ultimately what my North Star is, really just connecting with humans at scale. I love people. I love people, and I love connecting with others. And so the restaurant industry is the greatest place to do that, right? You know, there's nothing but that. And if you love that, it's a breeding grounds for success for people like me. And so I stayed working in restaurants all through high school. I ended up, you know, working in the front of the house, in the back of the house. And when I graduated high school, I took a year off and I worked in a bunch of nightclubs in the city. And then I went to Hunter College for a year, slept through the whole thing, realized it was a waste of my time and money, and went back to the restaurants and ultimately decided to go to culinary school. But prior to that, prior to making the decision to go to culinary school, I also had to make a big decision in my life, which was the greatest decision I ever made, which was to get sober. Because I'd been working in restaurants in New York City, you know, working in the nightlife. And I moved out of my parents' house very young. I moved out of my parents' house when I was 15 because it got a little hairy at home. And I was kind of on my own, just like making it work through high school. But it was layered with alcohol and drug abuse. And so when I was 23, I made the decision to get sober. And that's when my life really took off. And that's when I was really able to understand that I had value. And until I was able to kind of see the forest through the trees, I wasn't able to actually express that value and start building my career. So when I was 25 years old, I enrolled in culinary school and I spent a little over 2 years getting a culinary arts degree and a restaurant management degree from the French Culinary Institute, graduated there. Spent about 6 months writing a business plan. And at that point, I'd been working at the same restaurant for, you know, 6, 7 years. And all these regulars that would come to this great little restaurant in the East Village of New York City, they watched me go from this like kind of crazy kid at 20 years old to getting sober, starting to get my shit together, to meeting the woman of my dreams and getting married, to going to culinary school, coming out, writing a business plan. And, you know, they watched this arc in this person that they would come and hang with 3 days a week. I put a business plan in front of all of them and tried to, you know, and asked them if they wanted to invest in my first business as a restaurant. And 14 of those people wrote me a check for 25
Wow.
grand.
Wow.
And that was how I funded the first business, the meatball shop in the Lower East Side of New York City. And so when I was 28 years old, I opened up my first restaurant and it took off like absolute wildfire. And I was cooking meatballs on Jay Leno and Jimmy Fallon and Chelsea Handler and the Good Morning America and Today's Show. I mean, it was totally insane. And I took to it like I went all in.
Let me stop you there for a second. So fame, success, whatever the right word is, can be a downward spiral. Clearly that didn't impact.
No, as a matter of fact, the beauty of it for me was that I had already experienced the celebrity world in New York City because I was working in these restaurants where a lot of celebrities came. And I'm not saying I was a celebrity, but I became a little
sure.
bit of a New York City restaurant
sure.
icon very young. And the thing that I made my job to do was to continue working in the restaurants. And typically when I was in the restaurant, I was a young guy and I looked very young and I still look pretty young for my age. And I busboyed. When I was in the restaurant, my sleeves were rolled up and I was bussing tables, taking orders, running to the kitchen and hopping on the line if necessary. Like I was doing whatever was needed in that restaurant. And I think that mindset, that mentality allowed me to continue to stay a worker amongst workers. And I had also done a lot of work on myself in the world of recovery. So it wasn't like I was out like partying. My job was to build a successful restaurant company. My wife was incredibly supportive, even though I was working 18 hours a day. And I did just that. I paid my investors back in 6 months. One of those initial investors, they saw that we had kind of struck gold, my business partner and I, and said, I want to grow 5 more of these things with you. I'm committing to $3.5 million. It cost us about $750 to build a store. And he said, you know, you draw down money as needed, but, you know, let's go and see what we've got here. And Daniel and I, we built 5 more meatball shops over the course of 3 years. And by the end of that period, you know, we were doing $18, $20 million in revenue. And the two of us started the business with of $20,000. You know,
That's crazy.
it was one of these stories that like really goes down in history, you know, and it was a good story too. Like, we were two best friends. The partner that I had in the meatball shop was the guy who asked me if I wanted to deliver food at that vegan
Ah, very
restaurant when
cool.
I was. And so the two of us stayed best friends. And, you know, we had an opportunity to sell a big piece of the business. And it was an unbelievable opportunity that I couldn't convince Daniel to want to get behind. And that was when I knew I had to step away, because I was never in, and I still am not in business solely for the capital. There has to be a mission behind it for me. And the mission of the meatball shop was to create a restaurant that gave people an opportunity to come in and enjoy in an inexpensive way, but get a full service experience. You know, in New York, if you sit down at a table in most restaurants, you know you're going to spend 70 to 80 bucks per person. I wanted to create a restaurant that was super down to earth, super easygoing, and it only costs $20 to $25 to sit down and eat with a server and a bartender and the whole thing. And so we did that, and that's why we were super successful. I knew at that point, when we had that big offer from a private equity fund that really wanted to take Meatball Shop to the next level, when I couldn't convince the Daniel and the board to want to take that deal, I said, you know what, this is crazy. Like, I need to go create something on my own. And so that's what I did. I sold a bunch of equity at Meatball Shop to those guys about a year after that. And in 2015, I opened a second restaurant concept after exiting Meatball Shop. The second concept is called Seymour's, a sustainable seafood place. And it did the same thing. It took off like crazy. We were number one restaurant in New York City, New York Magazine for 9 months in a row. There was people knocking on my door that really wanted me to invest in it and grow it with me, and pumped the brakes on that. And I gave myself a little time to just really sink my feet into the sand with this new concept. And then ultimately, I took on a partner. We raised a bunch of money and we grew it to $22 million in revenue over 3.5, 4 years. And I said to Jay, the guy who I took on, I said, look, you know, if we can get this thing to a healthy 8 figures with strong EBITDA, you know, after 3 to 5 years, I'd love to be able to sell you equity so that I can go create another brand, because that's really where my juices flow. Like, I am a zero to one guy. Like, I love creating and building teams and building value and then ultimately passing it off to really strong operators and finance people, because that's ultimately what those businesses
Oh
become.
yeah,
It's a full
absolutely.
operations business
Yep.
at that point. But the hardest part, in my opinion, is really getting it off the ground and creating a brand that resonates. And that's what I love to do. And that's where I take risk. And I always risk my own capital. I mean, every business that I've started to date, I've always put a minimum of 10% in to kick off the business. We did that. And then in 2019, Jay and I had a conversation and I said, man, it might be the time. And he said, I think it's the time. And I sold him a bunch of my equity and I was off to the races creating the next brand. And that's now Creatures of Habit. It ultimately was supposed to be a restaurant to kick off. And then I was going to use the restaurant as an incubator for a line of consumer packaged goods, CPG company. And that's what I was going to invest in as the trajectory and growth of the business. But then the pandemic hit, and my whole career as I knew it in the world of brick and mortar retail restaurants was had come to a screeching halt. So I had to take some time and pivot and try to figure out what I was going to launch that was not in real life, that was a digital business. I knew that CPG was something that I wanted to do. I just had to get comfortable with drawing a line through the restaurant and getting going straight into consumer goods. I was on a run. I was in upstate New York, and it kind of all came to me on this run. So if anybody is an aspiring entrepreneur or an entrepreneur and you're looking for a way to deep dive and get some work done, get some inspiration, I guarantee you long runs or long walks without music or headphones in, a pad and a pen in your back pocket. That is how I come up with the inspiration for every business and new products or SKUs or menu items once that business is going. I literally just go for long walks or long runs and put my brain to work. I'd been eating this oatmeal for 16 years every single morning at that point, and hence why the business is called Creatures of Habit. I'm a real creature of habit. I am the quintessential creature of habit. I find something that I like that works and I stick to it. And when I got sober, I was introduced to this guy who was a wellness guru. And at the time, wellness wasn't even a term in 2004. You know, it was just like fitness and
Right.
nutrition, really. But this guy introduced me to fitness and nutrition as a way to kind of not only get sober, but stay sober and continue to feed my body the right things. And he told me to eat oatmeal every morning. And I listened to him.
And this was just traditional oatmeal at the time.
At the time, it was just traditional oatmeal. He was like, look, I want you to start your day with a healthy meal that's satiating, that you can add whatever you want to taste any way you want. You can add protein to it.
Right.
You can add maple syrup to it, nuts and berries and seeds or whatever. And so I just started over the years, just like making my own oatmeal concoction every day. And it was the meal that I looked forward to most. It was the meal that fueled me through sobriety. It was a meal that fueled me through getting married and having kids and building businesses and running marathons and becoming a pro bodybuilder and competing in Muay Thai kickboxing and doing all of these things that I did. This was my anchor meal. And when I was on that run, I was like, holy smokes, like authenticity is a massive part of every brand I've created. When it comes to my nutrition, there is no meal more authentic to me than this oatmeal that basically saved my life. What I now realize what the oatmeal was for me.
I was just going to ask you that.
It was obviously I needed direction and he gave me direction. I needed to be told what to do. And so he told me what to do. But really what he was doing for me was placing wins in the beginning of my day. He was placing wins in the beginning of my day so that I can feel confidence as I started my day. Because when you start your day, a lot of us start in anxiety, right? Anxiety is like how a lot of human beings wake up, whether you're in recovery or not, or whatever. You know, anxiety is a real thing in the morning. And especially if you're a busy person, right? Like you're like, what do I got to do? I got to do this. I got to do that there. So having little flagpoles, little winning flagpoles in that morning process really does help develop the foundation for the day, the concrete for the day. And for me, that concrete was poured with with oatmeal. And it was something that I just looked forward to. And I just knew that I was giving my body a win first thing in the morning. And I needed that then. And I still, to this day, I mean, I eat the oatmeal every single morning. So I came home from that run. I said to my wife, I know what I'm going to do. And she said, what is it? And I said, I'm going into the oatmeal business. And she was like, you really are a crazy son of a bitch. You know, I put pen to paper. I threw $250,000 of my own cash into a bank account and I began the process. And I asked for as much help as possible because I knew nothing about the world of digital marketing. I knew nothing about consumer packaged goods, but I knew that I had the ability to, I was comfortable asking for help. I felt confidence in my ability to outwork anyone. That's what I did. And I learned the business very quickly. And about a year after that, I had the product and I had the brand and I had the mission. And I pitched it to Gary Vaynerchuk, who's a badass in the world of digital marketing and just influence in general. And he loved it. He wrote the first check and we raised more money. And here we are, a little over 4 years later. We'll do $5 million this year in revenue, selling lots and lots of oatmeal. You know, it's a pretty cool story.
So who's eating your oatmeal? Do you have demographics?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So it's actually started off of the back of my audience, my personal brand audience, because I use that platform to introduce the business. And my personal brand audience is a lot of people like me. So it is 30 to 40 year old people that are active, athletic, and are looking for convenient, healthy ways to fuel their body. And so it really started that way. It was 80% male, and it was very like sort of athletic performance heavy. And now 40 years later, it has evolved a lot. It is 50-50 male, female. It is, the age range is from 20 to 60. And I really do believe that we have untapped the older demographic that really loves our product because it's so easy and it's got 30 grams of protein and it's got vitamin D and omega-3s and a probiotic digestive enzymes. It really is like a one-stop shop and it's a full meal. It's not a snack. So right now, I would say it still errs on the side of humans that are just looking to be better. And so they prioritize their health. Typically, our demographic is people that are comfortable with subscribing to a digital product because 70% of our revenue is driven through subscription. That ultimately qualifies people as busy, right? When people want to subscribe to something, when they don't want to have to think about shopping, right. They don't want to have to think about, well, what am I going to eat? It's people that are looking for a convenient organization of their life. And, you know, this product is perfect for that because it takes 30 seconds to make the night before this high protein overnight oatmeal. And then in the morning, you pull it out of the fridge and it's just ready to go. And it's delicious. You add a little splash of milk to it, almond milk, oat milk, whatever milk you want. You mix it up and it's ready to go. You can throw it in your bag and take it with you to work. It's just a perfect, super easy, convenient, low calorie, high protein meal that is awesome. And so we've really been able to get in front of a lot of people with it. And, you know, there is a competitor in the space that's doing a similar thing. They're about 7 years ahead of us.
Would I have seen them in Costco?
You might have seen them in Costco. It's a brand called Oats Overnight.
Yeah, I think I just saw, literally, a full transparency. You sent me some of these. I have been eating them. So what you're saying is true. I was in Costco maybe 2 weeks ago. What I just saw on there was 20 grams of protein, which I know you have more than that.
So we win in protein and we win in ingredients. They've just been around longer and they have a massive community of people. They are going to do 200 million in revenue.
Oh my
gosh.
Year.
Yeah. It's amazing. And I'm grateful for them. Truly grateful for them. They've done a kick-ass job, obviously. But the beauty of it for me is to just, they very clearly defined the market. Right? There's a massive market of people that want an optimized oatmeal, that want it fast and are looking for convenience at not a, you know, high price point.
Yeah.
So it's really awesome to see. We've since launched a sleep support hot chocolate. So it's a hot chocolate that's made with awesome ingredients that really helps you relax, fall and stay asleep and get really good qualitative sleep. I get a very healthy 7.5 to 8 hours
Man.
Of sleep a night, and I get 4 hours of deep and slow wave sleep. So deep REM sleep. And I owe it really to Creature Sleep. I do, because I use it religiously every single night. And then we have one more SKU that we're going to launch, which is a protein bar that's got 20 grams of plant-based protein. It also has 3 grams of creatine. So the story of Creatures of Habit is really we've got your back when it comes to nutritional, convenient, healthy habits from wake up to wind down. So you start your day with meal one, which is our oatmeal. The daily bar is our midday snack that's also got 20 grams of protein in it, super clean, really delicious. And then you finish your day with Creature Sleep to kick off your wind down routine and really, really help optimize your sleep. And between those three products, I know the brand is suited for success.
That's cool. Okay, let me dive in. So thanks for sharing that. I think it's always grateful to hear entrepreneurs like yourself, the whole story, because if done well, these businesses are creations coming out of your own ideas and who you are. Let me ask you a couple questions now. So how would you best describe who you are in the context of where you're in your life journey? If you could look at yourself for the next, whatever, 70, 80 years, whatever, where do you think you're at right now? If you could kind of put this at a point in time, where are you at in your life journey?
I believe that I'm just getting started in my career. I see myself as a thought leader. That is ultimately the direction that I am heading towards, because yes, I'm an entrepreneur. Yes, I understand business. But really what excites me is connecting with humans at scale and helping people. The businesses that I've created have done that. I've been able to change people's inner environments through community and products and environments that I've created. So really where I'm sort of at the kind of precipice of this thought leadership mountain that I'm going to climb, and think because I am so comfortable in public settings, you know, speaking publicly is something that I'm actually really drawn to. You know, I have a podcast, I've done a number of keynotes. I think that that is ultimately going to be the hub of my career going forward. And I'm just getting going in that.
Do you have a sense of where that's going or where you want to go?
Yeah. I mean, I look at people like Rich Roll. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but I look at a guy like Rich Roll as a great muse for me. Even though he isn't an entrepreneur necessarily, I will have that added benefit of always being interested in creating businesses. The beauty of thought leadership is that you develop this large community of people that look to you for comfort. They look to you for advice. They look to you for direction. In my 44 years of life, like, I've put a couple of cool numbers on the board. So I think I'll be able to get there with respect from the masses a little bit sooner than some of these other people that have, you know, done it a little bit later on in life after big wins. My goal is for Creatures of Habit to be the big win. I am all in on Creatures of Habit. I mean, it is like I live, eat, breathe, and sleep Creatures of Habit. And I know I've got probably about 3 to 5 more years of grinding hard to make that the big win for me as a business person financially, but along the way, helping people live better lives, right? And so once that win is accomplished, I think that that's when I go all in on the thought leadership side of my business.
When you say thought leadership, do you have that framed out of what areas, or is it wide open? You're trying to figure out what that thought leadership is, or is it simply in what you're doing right now?
When I think of thought leadership, what do I think about? I think for me, it's ultimately having a really popular podcast where I am talking to people, but also interviewing people, which I already have, but in a much bigger format where I'm able to spend energy and time and money on actually scaling the podcast. You know, I'm currently writing a book. I've got about 200 pages written on a book, and I'm taking my time with it. I've been writing this thing for the last 3 years, so it's a work in progress. The book will cover all areas that I've experienced in life, from having it pretty rough as a kid to coming somewhat held down by addiction and finding my way through addiction and turning my life around. And I am and probably have always been a type kind of human. No matter what I was into, I was all in on it hard. And I always kind of ended up being a leader in those things sort of organically, just based on who I am. And so between the podcast, the book, speaking engagements, and probably business, another business or two, that is ultimately how I see living my life. You know, I'll probably end up doing some coaching because I really do enjoy coaching and doing some retreats. I did a men's retreat in June on my property in upstate New York, and 32 guys showed up, and it was arguably one of the most gratifying experiences of my life. 30 guys walked away bonded as brothers, but also like turned a new chapter in their lives. And that is so important to me because I was given freely guidance when I needed it most, when I was knocking on death's door. I reached my hand out for help. God showed up in my life as well as other human beings, and they didn't ask for anything in return. And so that's kind of how I see my life going forward, is really paying it forward and being of service. And that's when I feel the best. I feel the best in that environment when I'm really helping people, when I'm helping people. And so all the businesses have been also a form of service for me. Like, you know, as the CEO of the company, especially in the world of digital, like I do something different. I take 2 to 3 days a week, and in the afternoons from 2 to 4 o'clock, I open up my Shopify store and I just start calling customers. I get on the phone with them and I introduce myself and I ask them about their lives and I thank them for being on the journey. And I get so many great stories from people about how once they started eating meal one, everything in their lives changed. They lost over 100 pounds. They got off their statins. They ran the marathon that they had been thinking about running for years. It really, like, that story of that little win in the morning, nutritional win in the morning, pumping confidence into people's lives is a real thing. It is. It saved my life.
Which is sad when you think of the opposite of how many kids, and I'm down here in Florida, and I know that especially a lot of these schools, the only reason the kids have 3 meals or at least 2 meals a day is because they go to school and get some meals. But once summer comes, they don't get their regular meals. So my heart breaks for kids who go to school hungry, and unfortunately, it's way more than we want to admit. So I could just see that one little thing is so powerful. Let me just a couple questions because we could go on and on, and I'm conscious of your time. Obviously, you have some very unique skill sets and drive and passion, but give us a little bit of your perspective on when did you realize the power of capital and what does that mean to you?
I realized the power of capital very young, super young. My perception of it today is very different than what it was then. Then, when I realized that I was not afraid to go out and make money, I had an enormous amount of confidence. It just gave me confidence, right? Like when I was like, okay, I remember when the Reebok pumps came out.
Oh, yes. I remember those.
And there was no way I was getting those Reebok pumps. There was no way. I asked for them for Christmas, I think for 2 or 3 years straight, and never showed up. Santa was not paying for Reebok pumps. But I made it my job. I think when I was 8 years old or 9 years old, I was like, I am getting those pumps this year. I'm going to get the damn Reebok pumps. And I went out and I made the money and I bought them. And I remember it's so funny, but I had a dream before I got the pumps. I had a dream that, and I remember the dream to this day. It's stuck in my mind. This could very well be the motivation that I have today. But I remember in this dream, I was in the country, and I didn't live in the country. I lived in the city. But it was like the evening time, and I knew that I was walking out of a house, and the house had like 3 or 4 steps down. From it was like there was a porch and there was like 3 or 4 steps. And I remember looking down and seeing the pumps on my feet and jumping off the
That's
stoop,
awesome.
the steps. And it just stood out for me. It was like, I'm gonna get those pumps. And I got the pumps, and I got the pumps. And that's when I believe the power of capital really did mean something to me and was and I was capable of earning. I was capable of earning. And once I understood that, I'm not the smartest guy in the room ever, ever. Like I'm just not. And I went to college for a year, I didn't do great in high school. I'm not like the academic. I am the emotionally intelligent guy that you can drop at Watts or the White House, and I am going to make friends. I am going to walk away with relationships that are going to last for a long time because that is who I am. And there's two ways to make money, right? There's the person that sits behind a desk all day long and their number one priority is to make money. And then there's someone like me who is out and about moving and shaking, meeting people, shaking hands, developing relationships, and I become the guy that people want to do business with because they like me. Being likable is so important in the world of business. And some people might disagree with that. My experience, and now also my experience as an operator and a CEO, I want to do business with the people that I like. I mean, it's not like if they're not capable, I'm not just going to do business with someone
Right.
because I like them. If I have a choice between the capable person that I know is going to get the job done, that's awesome, or the capable person I know is going to get the job done, that's an asshole, I am choosing the awesome person every time. Every time. And I'm a capable person, and I go out of my way to be awesome. And I intentionally do it at times. I mean, I think inherently I am just a guy that people get along with and enjoy being around. I know when I've got to turn the volume up because that is a skill set and a strength of mine that has done me right every single time. I never, ever take for granted who I'm sitting next to, ever, ever. Doesn't matter. Like, I could be sitting on an airplane and somebody starts talking to me, and I could easily be like, or I can engage in a conversation, and you never know who you're sitting next to, right? So, my wife wishes at times I was a little less talkative with
I get
strangers.
it. I get it.
But emotional intelligence is a real thing, and being likable is a real thing. And those are the two ways that I think people succeed in life financially is either you're the likable person that is capable, or you're the person that just is grinding it out hard, and people know that, and I'm not that guy. I'm not the one that just is happy sitting behind a computer working for 12, 14 hours a day.
So obviously very early on, money was a driver for you, or at least to get some of the things that you wanted. And so money, and look, I don't think there's anything wrong with money being a driver. On the other hand, money is a tool and can be used for good things or it can be destructive. When you went through this recovery, did that at all shape how you viewed money as well?
Look, money provides comfort and confidence. Comfort and confidence does not always equal happiness. I believe I have had to, over the course of my career, I have had to understand the balance between doing this for a financial outcome and also enjoying my life, right? Like I've spoken to so many restaurateurs before I got into the world of CPG that were generations above me, super successful. And anytime I had an opportunity to sit down with one of these legends, I would say, hey, like, I'm a young person. Like, I'm just starting out here. What's a piece of advice that you can give? And 9 out of 10 of them would say, spend more time with your family and friends. It's great to have money. It's great to be financially successful. But if you don't have anybody to spend it with because your wife left you and your friends are long gone because you haven't seen them or hung out with them in 10 years because you've been, buried in the work, really, is it worth it? And so I have really intentionally gone out of my way to understand what the balance could be. And that has come in the way of real boundary setting for myself. When I was an early day entrepreneur, I didn't understand the boundaries. I didn't understand the balance. And so I work 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for probably 6, 7 years. And do I think that that was necessary? Maybe. It might have been. I don't know. I can't tell you because that's the way I did it. And here I am. I can tell you that like there are some people that just don't get off of that train. It's not a life I'm interested in living. I have breakfast with my kids every morning and dinner with my wife and kids every single night, and that I'm not traveling. And that is a hard and fast boundary that I've set for myself. If I am in New York, I am eating breakfast with them and I'm having dinner with them, because the first 2 years of my first son's life, I did not. I was not around. I was working, and it's the only regret I have in my life. That's a fact.
So it's interesting. I've thought about this balance for a long time. And one of the things, I personally don't use the word balance. I use the word harmony. And I'll go to what you said earlier. Same thing. I was a workaholic. Could I have done it differently? I don't know. But one thing I would say is it's the communication with your wife. There are seasons where you're going to have to work hard and you're going to have to do more. And so to me, if you can live in harmony with your spouse and your family, recognizing that that stuff can't go on forever, there are seasons and windows of time where you're probably not balanced, but you're living in harmony. So just as you noodle on stuff, and if you have any thoughts on it, you can share, but that's a word that I've tried to, because I don't know what balance means, and I'm anal. And so I want to figure out what balance means. And as I've gotten older, I'm like, you know what, let me just live in harmony. It doesn't have to, it moves, it's variable, but it requires communication with those you love to make sure that it's working for everybody. You have any thoughts on that?
I can tell you, I'm not afraid to say them. That like work-life balance thing doesn't exist. It's just not real for my life. There's a lot of benefits and a lot of liabilities in being self-employed as an entrepreneur. I wear the weight of the success or the failure right. of the businesses on my back. Yep. So that is, no matter how you slice it, very different than working for a company, right? That said, I also have complete control over my schedule. I choose when I start, when I finish, what I'm working on, who I bring in to work on these things with me. I choose all of that. And the thing that I will tell you that has been monumental for me now in my 16th year of being an entrepreneur, is once I drew the boundaries that I am going to have breakfast with my wife and kids every morning, I'm going to have dinner with them every single night, and I'm going to not work on the weekends. Once I set those boundaries, I realized that I can stick to them, and that is the balance. Like, I think there is no better balance than that, quite frankly. And does that mean some nights I have to like put the kids down and then open up the computer again and work right. until midnight? Sure, it does. Does that happen a lot? Honestly, no. And I can tell you why, because I am an emotionally intelligent human being that has surrounded myself with really great people so that I don't have to do it all alone.
Yeah.
So that not only do I not have to do it all alone, but I am so confident in the people that I've surrounded myself with that if I don't open up the computer from Friday night at 9 o'clock till Monday morning, I feel like everything is okay. And that was just never the case for me. It just wasn't. It was not the case. Like, I could not get away from the work. And now I've set the boundaries. I've stuck to the boundaries. And I'll tell you, the person that inspired me most here is a guy named Gino Wickman. And he started something called EOS, the Entrepreneur's mm-hmm. Operating System. Yeah, I had him on my podcast a few years ago. And he told me on the podcast, I probably had him on in like very early 2020, right in the beginning of the pandemic. He told me in the podcast that he takes 150 days off a year. And I was like, what? And this guy's super successful, you know, and like across the board. And I was like, how is that possible? 150 days a year? And he was like, well, I'll break it down to you. I take every weekend off. So that's 104 days right there. I do not work on the weekends. And then I take the month of August off. So that's 134 days. And I try to take two 10-day vacations off a year. So between two 10-day yep. vacations, the month of August, and the weekends, he's at 154 days. And I said, wow,
yep.
that is a goal that I want to aspire towards. And I'm almost there. I'm almost there. And guess what? Would the business be further along if I worked 7 days a week? Sure. Would the people working within the business be as happy? Hell
no.
If my brand director or if my general manager, if my email marketing guy comes to me and says, hey, Mike, like, I really need a week off. 10 years ago, Mike would be like, no, I'm not taking, we're not, we don't just right. take a week off. Today, No problem. I got you. Just make sure that you got your covered transitions done. You figure it out. I got you. You need a week? Take a week paid, you know? And that's how I live my life today. And do I feel like it's balanced? I do.
All right, last question. If you could have one dream come true, what would it be? I'm gonna take the family off of it because I know that would be your number one. So you can say that, but then say one that's non-family oriented.
If I could have one dream come true, it would be that I never run into any catastrophic health problems until I'm very, very old. And even then, my one dream is that my health stays in really great shape. Because if there's one thing I know, you can have 1,000 problems in your life, but once your health becomes a problem, you've only got one. And I don't want only one. I want 1,000. I'd rather have 1,000 problems than
Yep.
that bad, than that big one. So it's, if I could live my life knowing that my health is in check, I'm unstoppable.
Take any of your food, your creatures of habit off the table. If there was one thing that you would tell somebody to start doing tomorrow, what would, for their health?
Go to bed early at night. Go to bed early. Because if you go to bed early, you wake up early. And if you wake up early, you've got a lot more time than everybody else on the planet to take care of business in the morning. You know, people will ask me, how do you wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and do all the things you do? And I say, because I go to bed, because I go to bed at 9, 9:30 at night. So if you go to bed at 9, 9:30 at night, waking up at 5 is no problem. I tell people to set the go to bed alarm as opposed to the wake up alarm. Going to bed is way harder than waking up in the morning, because if you go to bed at the right time, waking up in the morning is like, and you know, if you look pretty much across the board, most happy, healthy, successful people are up in the morning early getting things done. I like to have 2 hours to take care of my personal stuff before my family wakes up so that I'm not interfering with my family's life because I want to work out and do the sauna and do the cold plunge and pray and meditate and take care of my first 20 emails in the morning. I want to be available for them. And that the only way to really do that and feel good about it is waking up early in the morning. And the only way to wake up early in the morning is to go to bed at night.
Well, look, I really appreciate you coming and sharing these comments. One of the things that I've always told my kids, and you're living proof of this, just even in a bunch of stuff you've said today, this is a sad thing to say, but it's not about you, but it's sad to say, but it's true. And I tell my kids, pretty much watch how everybody's living and do the opposite, and you're probably going to be in a good spot. And even just like you said, you know what? I don't set an alarm to wake up, I set an alarm to go to bed. Like, that's a totally opposite thinking. And so you've said a lot of those little nuggets today where I hate to say it, it's you watch the masses, you're going to be mediocre. Do something different than you're seeing most people do. That's what you're doing. I mean, all the way from you're having a healthy breakfast every morning, it's the same thing. Most people are like, that's boring. I want bacon this morning, and I want to have freedom to do all this stuff. And the irony is even, and there is freedom within your oatmeal. You can create a bunch of freedom off it. And the reality is when you have some of these boundaries, you can actually have more freedom, because freedom, when it's too big, it's problematic.
I have a tattoo on my hand right here that I see every single day, multiple times of day. And it says, discipline equals freedom. It is just a fact, right? When you know what you got to do and you feel confident and comfortable doing it, you have more freedom than you'll ever know. It's when you don't know what to do and you're not confident in being able to do the things that you say you're going to do, are you a prisoner of your life?
One of my analogies has always been, look at a Michael Jordan, look at a Tiger Woods. I mean, they practice stuff mechanically. They at one level, they're robots. On the other hand, they're not, because then everything is automatic. Then they can start to bring in their freedom and the adjustments, and they live with this massive freedom because everything else is routine and it's habit.
Michael Jordan is not dunking from the free throw line if he isn't confident throwing free throws, you know? And that's the way to look at it. That dude is so confident in stepping up to that line and putting the ball in the basket that he can do a 360 dunk over Horace Grant, you know? Because just he's confident in his, in the basics and the essentials.
Well, thanks for joining us today. It's a pleasure. We will make sure that there is a link to your website so people can check it out and get on your oatmeal and then all the other things that you'll be coming out with as well. So for those of you who regularly join, eliminate this, but please rate us and review us on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this is Jeff Schaefer. Michael, thank you very much. This was awesome. Love what you're doing and love how you're inspiring people to live healthier lives.
Thanks, man.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.